matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, catch me a catch.
That's how Hollywood or Broadway sees the matchmaker. It's from the musical, wonderful musical, The Fiddler on the Roof. But the modern way of meeting your mate can be pretty transactional, even a bit risky. Swipe left on the app to say thanks but no thanks. Swipe right to say give me a call. Millions of Indians, though, still use a matchmaker to find the right spouse. And in the diaspora, it's becoming cool. Richard Carmarker from the Religion News Service has been looking into the trend.
You know, religion is a large part of matchmaking, I would say, because the people who are being matchmade really tend to stick in their own religious community, and even then in their own religious micro community, I would say. And I think it's very important where a matchmaker comes in and is able to find you a match in your pool. It might be a small pool, but it's very important to kind of remain within that religious group for a lot of people.
I mean, is it important to maintaining those religious distinctions? Because we know that while India is a great democracy, it is, increasingly a sectarian country. Is it important for a Hindu mother that her daughter only marry a Hindu? And I guess the same would apply to Muslims and Christians and Jains and Buddhists.
You know, I would say from my experience that that is correct. There are a lot of changes happening, of course, where interfaith marriage or, you know, even intercaste marriage is concerned. But I do think that overall, really, a Hindu mom would want her daughter to be married to another Hindu.
India has one of the biggest and most successful diaspora populations in the world. Why would a successful young Indian in the US or Canada or Australia, you know, recently graduated from university where he or she mixed with hundreds of other ambitious people, why would they feel today in the diaspora they need a matchmaker?
What I was trying to write is that matchmaking is really getting cool again. These kids are facing this issue where they're going on dating apps and these dating apps are not working for them. They're not necessarily going to find someone who's as serious as them, and you can't vet people as well as a matchmaker would. And these matchmakers come in and they already have on paper exactly what you're looking for. And that is compatibility with your family, compatibility with whatever lifestyle, whatever socioeconomic lifestyle you'd like to live, whatever educational background you have. It's pre-vetting this pool of people that while you're dating in this modern age, you really don't know, you know, who people are, even if they're Indian, even if they are Hindu. There's a lot more requirements that people want. And people, like you said, we are, a very successful diaspora. People are looking to remain within that. And they are really turning back to this matchmaking that has been in our culture for such a long time.
How does it work with the matchmaker? You know, I have to say, I first heard of the matchmaker when I was a kid, but it was listening to the musical Fiddler on the Roof. That was about the matchmaker in the Orthodox Jewish communities in the Pale of Settlement in Russia. But how does the matchmaker in India, but also in the Indian diaspora, operate?
That's exactly my first thought of matchmaker as well. But now it's become such a lucrative business, I will say. There are matrimonial websites just flooding the internet. And these websites will kind of personalize your matchmaking experience. It's like I said, it's gotten a lot cooler in the sense that these are websites that will have you fill out what's called a bio data, which is essentially like your LinkedIn profile and your just your requirements and your values and things like that. And they have a database of hundreds or thousands of other people who they will, if you pay, you know, a high price, these matchmakers will find you probably a handful of matches that you'll be meeting throughout the course of your payment for this matchmaking service.
One of the really fascinating things to come out of your piece, and we'll put a link to it at our website, is the concern, though, that could this deepen inequality? Because, I mean, you talked about, you know, the modern dating apps. I mean, you go on Tinder, I think it is, and people do list, don't they, their income. Can't you swipe to see someone of a comparable level of education in the United States, whether they've gone to the Ivy League. There's already concern that these things, you know, according to what I've read, deepen inequality. Could matchmaking do the same?
I think it can. You know, that's the danger. And I will say one difference between this is what I'm talking about is that matchmaking is largely between two families. And that's something you're not going to bring your family on Tinder, right? You know, once these families get involved, yeah, I do see that there are definitely issues that could come about. If they're really set on finding another Harvard graduate, it's kind of exclusive and not in a good way necessarily.
Yeah, well, what was the line that you used? If you're hoping to meet a 6 foot Indian Ivy League graduate who's a medical doctor. See, it's a cliche. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but is it a real phenomenon?
The phenomenon of being too picky or expecting too much is definitely true, or expecting this knight in shining armor to be found through a matchmaking convention or through a website. That's definitely an issue. But I think that, as I mentioned in the show as well, the Netflix show, people realize that they can't have it all. And that's true for arranged matches, for non-arranged matches. And so matchmakers really try to calm people's expectations a little bit as well. And so that's an issue. Mm.
Yeah, tell us about this Netflix program, because you argue that it's actually had a huge impact on the matchmaking industry in the diaspora.
When this show came out, people were, and this is Indian matchmaking on Netflix, people love reality dating, of course, and it brought to the forefront this way of life for many Indian people and Indian people in the diaspora that matchmaking is kind of normalized now, partly due to the show that just came out. And I think so many people have been, you know, interested and curious in non-Hindus or non-Indians, I'm saying, they're curious about, oh, like, I'm not finding anyone on these dating apps either. Like, I wish I could just have a matchmaker that knows everything that I want or everything that my family wants. You know, I wish that was something that was in my culture. And I think that it has really done, I mean, there's a lot of problems with the show, as I kind of hint at, but it has done a lot. And I've spoken to the matchmakers who said, you know, it has done a lot to bring this to the forefront, that it's not this misconception of forced marriages anymore. It's really this, you know, elite service that is available to us.
Yeah. To what extent, Richa, however, has the educational and professional success of the South Asian diaspora rebounded on the love lives of young people?
Are you referring to, you know, maybe societal expectations, parental expectations, things
well,
like that?
Well, too busy studying to fall in love.
That's an issue, right? When, you know, many children of South Asian parents have been kind of raised to, okay, keep your head in the books, keep your goals right, focus on your schoolwork, focus on your education. Other kids were out there, you know, dating. Other kids were out there having, you know, a good time. And then all of a sudden you become 24, 25, and they're like, oh, have you found anyone yet? And it's perpetuating this cycle of difficulty for these kids. And that's another reason why I really think that matchmaking is becoming a little bit more popular, because it's like all of these kids, I mean, not kids, I should say young adults, are in the same boat now. They didn't get the same maybe experiences that other kids did because of how hardworking they had been. And now they're trying to figure out how to date. And if their parents are also telling them that they need to get married, because that is another pressure, then it's like, okay, where do I even start?
Forgive my naivety, but does love play a role anymore? You know, that accidental meeting, that locking of eyes across the subway carriage, or, you know, meeting someone. I'm old-fashioned. I met my wife in the workplace. Does that play a role? Does love play a role anymore?
That type of love, meeting in the workplace, meeting in the subway, I think that's everyone's dream still. I think that hasn't changed since eternity. But as I said before, at the baseline, when you have a culture that's, you know, a marriage between these two families, it's important to a lot of these people to vet out their future match and even in arranged marriages, the idea is that you will gradually fall in love, that attraction will grow. But at the baseline, your lifestyles and socioeconomic status match, then that's enough until love comes into the picture. So of course, everyone would love that kind of love, but it's not as realistic for a lot of us.
Great to speak with you. Richa Carmarker, she's a senior writer at the Religion News Service. She's based in New York. We've been discussing her recent piece, How Indian Matchmaking is Cool Again. Thanks for joining us on the program, Richa.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was great.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, look through your book and make me a perfect match.
And this is the Religion and Ethics Report, where you're hearing about the links between religion and the news that's shaping the world.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.